Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu writes, "A good person is the bad person's teacher. A bad person is the good person's task. The one who does not honor the teacher and the one who does not honor the task, although ever so knowledgeable, they are confused." The next question is, well, which one am I? The good person or the bad person? Lao Tzu is toying with us. He uses good and bad to move us beyond good and bad. Who's good? Who's bad? Who's my teacher? Who do I honor? There must always be someone better than me, and I can't know beforehand who that is. Therefore, I must honor everyone, because anyone can be my teacher. And there must be someone not as good as me, and I can't know beforehand who that is. So everyone must be my task. The sage takes care of all people. This is called the subtle essence, says Lao Tzu. How would we live our lives if we were conscious every moment that everyone has something to teach us and that we can learn something from everyone? Would we honor the teacher in everyone? And how would we live our lives if we were conscious every moment that we are always in the process of teaching someone else, even when we don't realize it? That people are learning from us. What are they learning? Do we honor our task? Lao Tzu is talking about superlative humility. You leave no trace as you wander. It's not about you, not about me, not about our egos. It's not about needing to justify ourselves or our existence or being noticed or loved or needed or leaving a mark. It's about becoming an empty vessel in order to honor the teacher, honor the task. This summer, we've invited Linda Tirado to be our teacher. Her book, Hand to Mouth, Living in Bootstrap America, is a blunt account of what it's like to be poor in the United States. Her audience is her task. She's the teacher. The prophet Amos is also a teacher. He lived in the 8th century BC. And the book in the Bible that bears his name is a remembered collection of his oracles. Amos is both a person and a book. Amos, the person, was a sheepherder from a small, easily forgotten town, Tycho, 20 miles south of Jerusalem in the wilderness. It's said that John the Baptist used to wander around there. So Amos takes it upon himself to go north and talk to the powerful and the mighty about what he has seen, about what he has heard, his truth. Perhaps even, as he himself says, God's truth, a word from the Lord. It's someone like that 1939 film starring Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Mr. Smith, Amos, Linda Tirado, all with a good dose of chutzpah, speak directly to the centers of power and wealth. What life is like on the other side of the tracks. What life is like from the person who in Amos's time herds your sheep and dresses your fig trees. In Linda Tirado's time, what life is like from the perspective of those who serve our food, clean our rooms, build our houses, pick our grapes, oil our cars, bag our groceries. The language can be coarse from these teachers, blunt, unforgiving. It's as though the story has been pent up inside for so long that when it finally comes out, when it is long released, it explodes like water crashing down from the top of Multnomah Falls. From Amos, "Hear this, you that trample on the needy and bring to ruin the poor of the land, saying, 'When will the new moon be over so that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath so that we may offer wheat for sale?'" Amos is saying that the wealthy have no concern for the community holy days, for days like rest, like Shabbat. For them, Shabbat, a day of rest and a day of justice for all people, all laborers, all animals even who labor, for them, it's a nuisance. If they could remove this profit-reducing piece of government regulation, they would do so in an instant. In the meantime, they do whatever they can to chip away at it. Any type of restriction is an affront to them. They are the gods. Their cause of unrestricted money-making, regardless of land or people, is a divine law. Unregulated free trade is their creed. And with laws and justifications and propaganda and fear-mongering, they own the rhetoric. Any restriction you place on us will cause more suffering for you, they threaten. And we've heard that before. We've never not heard it, in fact, from the wealthy and the powerful, for those who manipulate the scales to their favor. They said it in Amos's time, they say it now. Because when a lie works, you keep repeating it. We will make the ephah small and the shekel great and practice deceit with false balances. Now, of course, they say that to themselves. To the microphone, television camera, advertising agency, they say that they are the ones pressed and restricted by the environmentalists and the bleeding hearts. They blame the poor as lazy, as freeloaders, the great unwashed. They are our benefactors. A rising tide raises all boats, they say. Except that the boats of the poor are sinking, filled with holes because they cannot afford to repair them. In order to squeeze out every bit of profit, says Amos, they buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. Ancient interest is that, taking the pledge of a poor's sandals as collateral, in anticipation that the needy will never be able to repay their debts. They will then take everything, even their shoes. Not only is the ephah small, the shekel great, the balance is false, the interest choking, what they sell is chaff mixed with the wheat, the sweepings, the junk. And Amos has finally had enough. So he packs up his bags and he heads north. The late Marcus Borg, in his last book, Convictions, the subtitle is, I'm paraphrasing, Stuff That Really Matters. That isn't what he said, but it's like that. Devoted a chapter to Amos. For him, Amos revealed the core of the Jewish and Christian prophetic tradition. In the oracles of Amos, Borg discovered the essence of faith. If it doesn't address social injustice, faith is worthless. Linda Tirado, with The Fire of Amos, writes from the poor to the wealthy, start admitting that you need us as much as we need you. Here's our challenge. Can we honor the teacher? Or will the myth that the poor are poor because it's their fault override anything that might challenge that myth? Okay, full disclosure. I'm on your team. Linda Tirado and Amos challenge me more than I like. They make me uncomfortable more than I like, and they inspire me as well. Because you know the truth when you hear it. I'm concerned that we have become a country that is so individual-focused that we've lost touch with our sense of the common good. I think we need to reclaim it, and I think it's incumbent upon all of us, regardless of where we are on the economic spectrum or the political spectrum, to seek the common good. To, in the words of Lao Tzu, take care of all people. So in that spirit, I took a bit of a risk this morning, not knowing you all that well, and I got political. And I invited Matt Grover from Yes on 97 to come and speak to us and join us for a conversation after worship. I myself have endorsed this campaign. You'll find my name on its website, along with many other of my clergy colleagues, some Presbyterians in this presbytery, and other community leaders. I think that corporations that take profits must contribute to the common good by paying their fair share of taxes on those profits. We took students in my last church to West Virginia for an Appalachia service project. I don't know if you've ever been to West Virginia. It's a weird place. And this particular county that we went to, it's a beautiful place. But this particular county that we went to is one of the poorest counties in the nation. And yet this county exports a fortune every day in coal, one train after another. It has some of the richest coal deposits in Appalachia, and it all went out, nothing for schools, for roads, for the people who actually live there. That is deregulation. That is trickle-down economics. I grew up in Butte, Montana, the richest hill on earth, and I'm reading a book now about the mine disaster of 1917 that killed 163 miners. For lack of safety measures, and you imagine how limited safety measures might have been in 1917, but Anaconda Company didn't even force those. The Anaconda Company that owned the papers and the politicians found a way legally to pay virtually nothing to most of the surviving families. $75 for a funeral. The company managed to divide and destroy all the union workers. The legacy of the Anaconda Company today, you can drive by Butte, is one of the largest Superfund sites in the U.S., a big pit of toxic waste. Again, 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 all around beautiful planet Earth. This is a political sermon. I admit it. Because the tradition that we follow, the texts that we read, include Amos. And Amos demands of us that we be political. Political comes from the Greek word polis, which means city. What's good for the city? Our tradition says that we need to listen and speak and work together for our polis. And in particular, our tradition calls us to be political for the cause of justice for the poor and needy. Because we need each other. We care and act on behalf of the common good. That we go out on a limb when we need to do so to demand a change and to work with others for that change. So having said that, I especially enjoy being in this congregation because this congregation doesn't just sit there and take it, but pushes back. And I hope you'll stay and join us after worship this morning and talk about this measure with Matthew and with one another and see if this measure might be good for the state of Oregon. And if you think differently, we especially need your voice. Because at the end of the day, we are each other's teachers. We are each other's task. Amen.